This is VOA News. I'm Marissa Melton. The White House revealed Thursday that lawyers for U.S. President Joe Biden have found additional classified documents at his home in Delaware. As VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman reports, it's the second set of stored secret materials found from Biden's time as vice president.
After President Biden on Thursday morning concluded prepared remarks about getting inflation under control, none of the reporters wanted to ask him about the economy.
Classified material, next year Corvette. What were you thinking?
Biden acknowledged a small number of documents with classified markings have been discovered in storage areas and in file cabinets in his personal library at his Wilmington home.
My Corvette's in a locked garage. Okay, so it's not like you're sitting out in the street.
White House officials contend Biden's situation is different than that of the classified documents found during a federal search at former President Donald Trump's residence in Florida, because Trump resisted efforts to review and return the materials, while Biden is fully cooperating with the Department of Justice. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
Ukrainian forces in the eastern city of Soledar are holding their positions and inflicting significant losses on Russian troops, according to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in his video address on Thursday. A Russian-installed official in Ukraine's Donetsk region earlier said pockets of resistance remained in Soledar, undermining claims that the town had been captured. Zelensky thanked two Ukrainian units in Soledar, which he said are holding their positions and inflicting significant losses on the enemy. He did not give more details. From Washington, this is VOA News. Another sign that inflation is slowing has given the stock market something to rally about. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Wall Street closed higher after a new report on consumer prices showed some moderation last month in inflation.
We've got some good news.
President Biden announcing inflation declined to 6.5% in December, down from 7.1% the previous month. He says lower gas prices help.
My administration took action to get oil onto the market and bring down prices.
But analysts are flagging some caution with the lower numbers. Mark Hamrick at Bankrate.com.
We're still seeing some upward pressure coming from food prices as well as the measure for shelter or housing.
The Dow gained 216 points for the day, but Treasury yields fell as investors start to think the Fed might downshift the size of its next rate hike. I'm Jackie Quinn.
A massive storm system rolling across the southern United States has spawned a tornado that caused substantial damage in Selma, Alabama. AP correspondent Norman Hall.
The tornado shredded walls of homes, toppled roofs, and uprooted trees in Selma, a city etched in the history of the civil rights movement. The National Weather Service described the tornado as large and extremely dangerous and says it caused damage in a matter of minutes. That struck fear in residents who saw buildings brought down.
Somebody crying.
Yeah, I heard a baby crying too. She said that she heard that baby crying.
Oh my God.
The severe weather also caused damage in Georgia. Damage was reported in counties west of downtown Atlanta, including Douglas and Cobb counties. Thousands of customers in Alabama and Georgia are without power. I'm Norman Hall.
Lisa Marie Presley, the only child of rock and roll legend Elvis Presley, died on Thursday after being rushed to a Los Angeles area hospital. Her mother, Priscilla, announced the news, calling her daughter the most passionate, strong, and loving woman I have ever known. Celebrity news website TMZ reported Presley had suffered cardiac arrest at her home in a Los Angeles suburb. She was age 54. Presley was the owner of her father's famous mansion known as Graceland, where Elvis died in 1977. A U.S. Customs and Border Protection official said Thursday that migrants seeking asylum at the U.S.-Mexico border can now use a mobile app to schedule a time to approach a land port of entry. The move is intended to reduce crossings, but it has sparked concerns over privacy and access. The app is called CBP One and is available in English and Spanish. It will allow migrants in central and northern Mexico who upload biographical information and a photo to request an appointment at one of eight ports. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Today is Friday, January 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, U.S. Attorney General appoints special counsel to probe classified documents at President Joe Biden's home.
She's saying that the White House has been transparent. She's saying that the White House has done the right thing. As soon as they discovered the documents, they turned it over to the National Archives.
Russia says its forces are edging closer to capturing strategic eastern Ukraine town.
Russian forces used jets, mortars and rockets to bombard Soledar in an unrelenting assault. If Soledar were to fall into Russian hands, it would be a prize for a Kremlin starved of good battlefield news in recent months.
And U.S. air travel returns to normal after a computer system that sends safety information to pilots broke down. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland has appointed a special counsel to investigate the presence of documents with classified markings found at President Joe Biden's home in Wilmington, Delaware, and at an office in Washington. Earlier Thursday, Biden acknowledged that a document with classified markings from his time as vice president was found in his, quote, personal library, along with other documents found in his garage. New House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, a California Republican, said of the latest news, quote, I think Congress has to investigate this, unquote. For more, I spoke with VOA's White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widas-Kuwara.
This was surely the thing that was the most asked about questions during today's press briefing. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre had to answer numerous questions. And even though, you know, every single time she just kept on repeating the fact that a special counsel has been appointed by the Department of Justice, Attorney General Merrick Garland, an ongoing review is happening, so she can't really say much. She's saying that the White House has been transparent. She's saying that the White House has done the right thing. As soon as they discovered the documents, they turned it over to the National Archives and alerted the Department of Justice. However, the question on transparency remains, because really, the White House did not tell us about the second batch of documents, even though they appear to have perhaps known about it when they made the first announcement. So there's a lot of questions about just how willing, how far the White House is willing to be transparent about this issue. Certainly very explosive politically, and they have to answer a lot of questions.
Patsy, has the White House reacted to allegations of double standards, especially its reaction to the case of former President Donald Trump?
Several times, Karine Jean-Pierre have said that basically the White House is doing the right thing. You know, they're not stonewalling, even though she's not making a direct comparison with how the Trump team is handling this. But she just keeps on repeating that the White House has been transparent. The White House is trying to do the right thing. Now, of course, that's debatable and questionable. But the experts that I've spoken to have underscored the fact that there's a couple of things here. Number one, whether or not the mishandling of these documents is inadvertent. And number two, as soon as these documents were found, what were the steps taken? And I think those are the two things that the White House is really relying on. The White House press secretary has not made a direct comparison between how the White House is handling this and how the Trump team handled their mishandling of classified documents. She is only saying that they are confident a thorough review will show that these documents were inadvertently misplaced and that the president and his lawyers acted correctly and promptly upon discovering this mistake. So that's the line that the White House is really relying on, the fact that this was an accident, and number two, they tried to correct the mistake as soon as possible. But still, the reporters are not giving up and asking all these difficult questions that the White House seems unwilling to answer, at least while the review is happening.
That's VOA White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widas-Kuwara speaking with me from the White House. Russia says its forces are edging closer to capturing a salt mining town in eastern Ukraine. Capturing the town of Soledar would mark an elusive victory for the Kremlin, but it comes at the cost of heavy Russian losses and extensive destruction of the territory they claim. In one of the bloodiest battles of Russia's invasion, the fate of the eastern Ukrainian town hangs in the balance. Associated Press correspondent Karine Chamas reports.
Russian forces used jets, mortars and rockets to bombard Soledar in an unrelenting assault. If Soledar were to fall into Russian hands, it would be a prize for a Kremlin starved of good battlefield news in recent months. It would also offer Russian troops a springboard to conquer other areas of Donetsk province that remain under Ukrainian control, such as the nearby strategic city of Bakhmut. In the trenches in the Donetsk region, Ukrainian troops fire mortars at Russian forces. The Ukrainian soldier known as Festa tells the AP the Russian military fires relentlessly, sometimes just for practice. He said, "They don't shoot like we do. We count and clearly try to work well. I'm Karen Chamas."
Thank you, Karen. And Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese is preparing to sign a new security deal with his counterpart in Papua New Guinea, as Canberra looks to counter Chinese influence in the Pacific. Albanese arrives in Port Moresby on Thursday, aiming to deepen defence ties with Australia's nearest neighbour. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
Regional security is expected to dominate talks between Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese and Papua New Guinea Prime Minister James Marape. The leaders are discussing a formal bilateral security treaty that's expected to be ratified by June. Details of the accord have yet to be made public. Just a few kilometres of sea separate the countries. This is the first visit to Papua New Guinea by an Australian Prime Minister since 2018. Albanese will be the first foreign leader to address the country's parliament. Analysts say his visit is part of Canberra's efforts to counter China's diplomatic and trade ambitions in the Pacific. Australia is pursuing what officials call a family-first approach to security in the region, a strategy based on close bonds regional countries have that experts believe deliberately exclude China. Last year, China signed a security agreement with the Solomon Islands, a close neighbour of Papua New Guinea. The archipelago is about 2,000 kilometres northeast of Australia, with a population of 700,000. At the time, Solomon's leader Manasa Sogavare said the pact with China would offer protection from external or internal threats and was no different than a security agreement already in place with Australia. Beijing, however, failed to convince other Pacific countries to join a broader regional pact. Pat Conroy, Australia's Minister for International Development and the Pacific, told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation Thursday that Albanese's visit to Papua New Guinea will deal with environmental and security issues.
It's also about joint efforts to combat things like climate change and about strengthening the Pacific regional architecture with a Pacific family-first approach to security needs throughout the Pacific. So it's all about strengthening Australia's and PNG's relationship and making it clear that we're the security partner of choice.
Australia's Foreign Affairs Minister Penny Wong has made several visits to Pacific countries since Albanese's Labour Party won a federal election last May. Last month, Wong signed a new security accord with Vanuatu. While attempting to counter China's ambitions in a region it regards as its traditional sphere of influence, Australia is also attempting to soothe relations with China, its most important trading partner. Geopolitical and trade disputes have damaged the bilateral relations to such a degree that in recent years both sides have barely been on speaking terms. But there's now an apparent thaw in relations. Albanese met Chinese President Xi Jinping on the sidelines of the G20 summit in Bali, Indonesia last year. Canberra and Beijing have conceded that there'll inevitably be disagreements between them, but both sides have indicated they are seeking stable, honest dialogue and an end to diplomatic hostilities. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Human Rights Watch says African nations need to do more to address the widespread displacements, killings and other abuses that have come from the continent's many conflicts. The rights group published a new report this week that summarizes human rights trends in 23 African countries. Mohamed Yusuf reports for VOA's Africa News Center in Nairobi, Kenya.
Mausi Segun is the head of Human Rights Watch Africa. She says that in many African countries, the population is caught up in conflict and simply has nowhere to turn.
Some of the most egregious human rights violations continue to cascade in the context of conflicts. Civilians have continued to bear the brunt of armed conflict, communal violence, political and social unrest, as well as government repression against critical and independent voices in several African countries. All of this has resulted in the destruction of lives and livelihoods.
According to ACLED, the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project, there were at least 36,000 violent events and more than 50,000 deaths caused by violence in Africa last year. Human Rights Watch said in at least 15 armed conflicts in the Sahel, the Lake Chad Basin area, the Great Lakes region and the Horn of Africa, government forces and armed groups have been implicated in abuses against civilians.
Armed insurgents and in many cases government forces have inflicted terror and horror on civilians caught amid the fighting and forced hundreds of thousands of people to flee both within and outside their national borders, where many face discrimination, rejection, and sometimes violent repulsion.
Political, religious, and social intolerance has also increased, according to human rights researchers. The report said hate speech, attack on perceived political opponents, increased competition for resources, and other factors continue to fuel communal tensions, insurgency, and extremist recruitment in some African countries. The rights group praised the African Union and regional bloc, including ECOWAS, for taking action, such as reconciling Ethiopia's warring factions, condemning coups in West Africa, and refusing to recognize any attempt to seize power by force. Karine Kaneza Nantuya, Deputy Director of Human Rights Watch Africa Division, said the continental body is not doing enough to investigate human rights violations.
They do hold summits. They do talk about, for instance, the fact that they want the Peace and Security Council to conduct a study and assessment of the driving causes behind these different crises. But the gap in there is that there's no emphasis on justice and accountability issue, which should be at the core of their political decisions, one, to sustain those processes, and two, to provide redress and justice to the millions of victims that are affected by this crisis.
In the Central African Republic and Guinea, the rights group noted progress in ensuring justice for serious crimes. The International Criminal Court in The Hague has opened trials against militia leaders in the Central African Republic and Sudan, both of which have committed serious crimes against civilians. The Washington-based organization Human Rights Watch Africa Division urges African leaders and governments to implement policies to monitor and report human rights violations in conflict zones. They say such a move could help prevent atrocities and humanitarian crises. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
In other news, U.S. air travel has returned to normal a day after a computer system that sends safety information to pilots broke down and grounded traffic from coast to coast. By early afternoon Thursday on the East Coast, only about 100 flights have been cancelled and 1,700 delayed. Those figures are much lower than Wednesday, when more than 1,300 flights were scrubbed and 11,000 delayed. The Federal Aviation Administration said a damaged database file appeared to have caused the outage in the safety alert system. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg promised a thorough examination to avoid another major failure. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Junaid Rofo in Washington. The foreign ministers of France and Germany have arrived in Ethiopia to support a November peace deal between federal and Tigray authorities to end 2 years of brutal war. Maya Masakea reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
French and German foreign ministers Catherine Colonna and Annalena Baerbock met Thursday with Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed in a visit to support the Tigray peace deal. The November deal has seen steady progress with basic services restored to the Tigray region, increased aid, and a first handover of heavy weapons by the Tigray People's Liberation Front to Ethiopia's federal forces. Witnesses say Eritrean troops in December withdrew from at least two cities in Tigray, but it's not yet clear if they intend to leave the region entirely. The European leaders will also meet with officials at the Addis Ababa-headquartered African Union. The AU brokered the Tigray peace deal, and its monitors arrived in the region this month to oversee its implementation. France and Germany also want to help with food insecurity caused by a record drought in the Horn of Africa and a squeeze on grain supplies and increased food prices from Russia's war on Ukraine. The two-day visit includes a trip to a World Food Program warehouse in Ethiopia's Oromia region, where donated wheat from Ukraine to help address the hunger is being stored. The French and German governments finance delivery of the much-needed grain and are expected to announce fresh aid to people in areas affected by Ethiopia's brutal two-year civil war. German Foreign Minister Baerbock said her visit was intended to support Ethiopia on its way to lasting peace and accountability for human rights abuses. UN investigators say there is evidence of war crimes and crimes against humanity committed by all sides in the conflict, including rapes, torture, and extrajudicial killings. A UN report in September said the Ethiopian government and its allies also used starvation as a weapon of war, which it denies. Researchers at Ghent University in Belgium estimate 500,000 people have died in Ethiopia since war broke out in November 2020 from conflict, hunger, disease, and lack of medical care. The UN says millions were displaced in the war and more than 5 million Tigrayans need humanitarian aid. Maya Misakar for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Big names like GM, Ford, and Google say they want to work together to establish standards for scaling up the use of virtual power plants. They are positioned for explosive growth in the United States and could help balance the supply and demand for energy. Emma Jal of Reuters reports.
They're being billed as a cleaner and greener way to avoid blackouts. And they could be one solution to a looming global energy crisis. But what are virtual power plants? And why are companies like Google and GM getting involved? Virtual power plants, or VPPs, are pools of decentralized energy resources. Resources like electric vehicles or electric heaters controlled by smart thermostats. The VPPs will, with permission from customers, use advanced software to react to electricity shortages by backing off the consumption of those resources. It'll use techniques like switching thousands of EVs from charge to discharge mode, or prompt electrical heaters to lower their output. The goal is to back off on unnecessary energy consumption to ease loads on electricity grids when supply is short and avoid disaster. Here's Mark Dyson, the managing director of the Carbon-Free Electricity Program at the energy transition nonprofit, RMI.
We've seen on display over the last few years significant existential threats to the reliability and resilience of our power system in the United States with blackouts in Texas, blackouts across the Eastern interconnection. We have a reliability crisis in this country, and we need every tool at our disposal, including virtual power plants, to help address it.
RMI will be hosting a new initiative known as the Virtual Power Plant Partnership, or VP3. It'll be working with big names like GM, Ford, and Google, who say they want to establish standards for scaling up the usage of VPPs together. VPPs have already improved grid reliability in places like Germany and Australia. They're poised for explosive growth in the United States, thanks to new or enlarged tax incentives for sustainable energy efforts in 2021's Inflation Reduction Act.
That's Emma Jell of Reuters.
This is Science in a Minute.
Since going into operation about a half year ago, the James Webb Space Telescope has been providing breathtaking images of cosmic wonders, some of which almost go back to the Big Bang. According to a press release from the Space Telescope Science Institute in Baltimore, Maryland, the JWST, as it's also known, has confirmed its first exoplanet. Known as LHS 475b, this planet beyond our solar system is only 41 light-years away in the constellation Octans. Scientists describe it as a small and rocky planet that is almost Earth size, with an approximate diameter that is 99% of our home planet. LHS 475b is said to be closer to its red dwarf star than any planet residing in our solar system, orbiting it once every 2 days. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA Africa would like to hear from you. Send us a text message or a voice note on WhatsApp 24/7. Leave a comment, request, or send us a greeting, and you could be hearing your message on VOA Africa. Simply dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. We are always happy to hear from you. The number again is international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa, your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. 16 times is a charm. That is how many votes it took for the incoming 118th Congress to elect a Speaker of the House. We will talk with political analysts John Fortier and Jim Kessler about the trade-offs Republican Kevin McCarthy made to a group of far-right members in exchange for their support and what impact this may have on the legislative and oversight agenda of the 118th Congress. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out VOA Africa for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Can the world's most pressing problems be solved without the full participation of half its population? The answer from the United States is a resounding no, as Secretary of State Antony Blinken noted at the launch of the first ever U.S. strategy on global women's economic security.
We need women's full economic participation to actually lead an inclusive recovery from the COVID pandemic. As you've heard, we need their leadership in resolving conflict. We need their ideas and their innovation to tackle the climate crisis.
Secretary Blinken said the new U.S. strategy has at its heart a simple vision, creating a world in which women and girls everywhere can contribute to and benefit from economic growth and prosperity.
That's a world in which we will all be better off. Closing the gender gap in the workforce by 2025 would add up to $28 trillion to the global economy.
However, barriers to women's full economic participation, social, legal, and financial, stand in the way. Secretary Blinken outlined four lines of effort the United States will undertake.
First, we will advance women's economic competitiveness so that more women can fully participate and lead in all sectors and all industries, including as CEOs and board members.
The second line of effort will be to strengthen foundational support, childcare, elder care, that allows women to participate fully in the economy. The third line will be to promote women's entrepreneurship and financial and digital inclusion. And finally, the United States will work to help dismantle systemic barriers to women's equitable participation in the economy. The United States will encourage nations to repeal discriminatory laws and advocate for reforms that promote gender equality. Across each of these lines of effort, we will work in tandem with partners around the world, he said. Promoting women's economic security is the right thing to do, but it's also the smart and necessary thing to do, declared Secretary Blinken. When everyone can contribute to their full potential, our economies are more prosperous, our societies are more full of opportunity, our nations are more peaceful, and everyone is better off.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.